Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Senior Vice President ICANN, Kurt Pritz.
Good afternoon. I'll talk about the glitch and then you'll stop clapping. We heard Sebastian's comment just before, especially our new CEO, Fadi, wherever he is, and suggested that we put a mic here so that questioners can look at the audience and the audience can see the questioners. And taking on my own initiative, I left a microphone here, so if you want to come up here and address, you know, be seen by the crowd and address them facing them, which it could be preferable, please come up here to ask questions if you have them, or if you feel comfortable down there, we have that too, and we'll try that. So ICANN is in the process through its partners of evaluating the new GTLD applications, and so we're in our silent periods. And I don't have much to say, so I'm kind of surprised at the size of the crowd. But there you go. Our remote participation partner is Michelle Jordan from our communication staff, and she would be giving some of the first part of this talk if she wasn't monitoring remote participation. And I'll be joined by Karen Lentz later from ICANN. What we're going to talk about is what we're going through right now. So the recently concluded application process and statistics, then some about the evaluation process and what's happening right now. And then other implementation work, getting ready for the trademark clearinghouse and stuff. And we'll also talk, I think, about sessions coming up throughout this week that talk about new GTLDs. So that's what we're going to talk about. Some statistics that this audience is probably well familiar with. At the end of the day, there are 1,930 completed applications submitted and paid for in TAS. There's 751 applications for contested strings. If you do the arithmetic, that means at the end of the day, there's, I think, 1,551 applications that could possibly pass through the system. Did I get that number right? There's 116 applications for IDNs, 84 applications for community-based TLDs, 66 self-designated applications for geographic TLDs within the meaning of the applicant guidebook, that definition of geographic, and 3 financial support applications. I want to comment a little bit on each one of these numbers at some point during the presentation. To many, including me, we might be, as a community, a tiny bit disappointed in the number of financial support applications, 3, and that's already been discussed in the community here and what we can do about it in the future. One thing that's been pointed out right away is to improve our community outreach and communications. I think, and I was meeting with ALAC before, and we talked about for the next round reconcepting financial support and who might qualify for it. The Joint Applicant Support Working Group was very careful in fashioning the applicant support process and ensuring that we gave financial support only to those applicants who had the financial wherewithal to operate a registry but might not have the $185,000 application fee. And that might be kind of a narrow band, those that are able to run a registry but not able to afford the application fee. And so going forward, we think with more time to raise funding, we should reconcept a little bit who might qualify for applicant support to broaden the opportunities for those who couldn't avail themselves this time. To take a little closer look at the other kind of application subsets, there's IDNs, internationalized domain names, community TLDs, and geographic TLDs. Some applied for two of those. One applicant applied as all three, an IDN, a community TLD, and a geographic TLD. But this graphic gives some sense of that mix, and I won't read the numbers to you. And it was a clever graphic designed by Dan Halloran standing at a whiteboard that kind of indicates what the distribution of these categories of TLDs that we applied for, that were applied for. Applications for region, and these are by ICANN region, and ICANN regions are somewhat wacky, but for consistency's sake, these are grouped in ICANN regions. Comments here really went to, how do we regard the fact that there's only 17 from Africa and 24 from Latin America? Do we view that as a failure or not? And there's a couple ways of looking at that. One way is that there's 21 or 22 GTLDs right now. So the number of GTLDs in Africa soon, if they pass, will be almost equal to the number of total GTLDs now, which is a very vibrant marketplace. Similarly, the number of GTLDs from Latin America might equal that number. So while off to a slower start in those regions, we think that'll encourage more participation in the internet in the GTLD space, the creation of GTLD registrars in those regions where there are very few now. So while those numbers could be larger, we see it as an improvement and a decrease in the digital divide. ICANN mans a customer service center. To date, there's been over 9,000 inquiries received and responded to date. That customer service center is presently performing the administrative completeness check. So that's a check to make sure the applications are complete before the evaluation panels actually start their work. We're currently processing refund requests, and I've signed a number of those. So those are going out to those listening at home that might have requested a refund. We're also processing change requests, applications that are now published in the cold light of day. The applicants themselves are reading their own applications and finding some errors, and they've requested changes to be made. As you might well guess, those changes have to be made very carefully. There's really no changes allowed to applications after they're submitted. But understanding there could be errors, we've developed a process for evaluating these change requests and ensuring there are, in fact, evidence that are indicia of error and other aspects so that these change requests can be processed. So you will see announcements and indications from time to time that applications have been amended. They're being amended in line with requests by applicants, indicating that an error has been made, and a review to ensure that these changes aren't materially affecting others and other factors. We also want to improve our customer service, and so we're working to put individuals that are ICANN staff members in each region. So applicants in each region of the world can receive a call from someone in their time zone and someone who, if they can't speak their language, at least has access to someone who can speak their language. So we can improve, as we go through this stage, one-to-one communication with applicants and have somebody at least fairly local to them in their region. So one time this slide might have said TAS glitch, but information about this has been widely published, and so this is just a recap of the timeline. That due to that, TAS was taken offline on April 12th and restored on May 21st. At the time it was taken offline, there was 12 or 18 hours left until the application deadline, and understanding that applicants were inconvenienced significantly by this, perhaps. We wanted to leave enough time for applicants to spin back up their effort to complete their application. And so instead of 12 hours, we left, in fact, several days for or a week for applicants to finish their application. At the time TAS was taken down, there were 1,268 registered users in the system. Remember, users can file multiple applications. TAS holds about 100,000 file attachments, so it's fairly extensive. And at the time, there were over 2,000 applications in progress or submitted. We identified out of the 95,000 files and 2,091 application in process, 455 instances where file names or usernames of one applicant might have been used, seen by another applicant. And if there are more questions about that, please ask. But we were very extensive in our in daily communications about our developing understanding of the situation. Users were informed of the whether they were affected or not. I remember they were notified on May 8th, which was my birthday. And of course, most users were unaffected. We think that, and we want to hear your feedback, but we placed an emphasis on communicating about it at the start, daily updates, in addition to videos and FAQs. In addition, we offered a full refund instead of withholding the filing fee for those that wanted a refund. And besides fixing the glitch, we did some other things too. So we took steps to improve performance because when turned back on, we expected every user to open up the system and check on his or her application in order to make sure it was still sound. And so we took significant steps to improve performance. So with that gratefully behind us, we're now into the evaluation phase where we're evaluating applications. Initial evaluation formally of the applications is scheduled to start on July 12th. I'll tell you informally, it's already started, and it's part of a carefully constructed plan to bring our evaluators up to speed. And so evaluation panels have already been given applications and have already evaluated them and returned them. And what we do is we take a pair of evaluation teams from different firms, give them the same applications. They come back and trade results and see if they've scored questions the same or differently. We're now in the second round of that. There's a high degree of correlation in the scoring, so that's gratifying. And where there's differences, we'll find that one firm missed something, so their agreement on the central issue, or they can arrive at an accommodation of where their differences was. And even though the correlation was high, we want to continue to improve that so there's, you know, as close to possible complete consistency across different firms with regard to how they evaluate applications. So evaluation is going to start in July, on July 12th. As far as releasing information, it was planned to do release information in batches every 5 months of approximately 500. One of the discussions we're having here in another situation is whether we should release information in batches like that, release the evaluation results, or do one batch and release all the results at the same time. But even though there's over 1,900 applications, our early projections are that all applications will be done in 15 months. Our original schedule said it would take longer for this many applications. We've heard the community and are looking for efficiencies and economies of scale in order to do them faster, but don't feel ready to commit to that or able to commit to that at this stage of the game. Even though there will be an extended period for evaluation because of the number of applications we received, the guidebook specified limits for objecting and public comment is the same. So where we said there's 7 months for public comment in the guidebook for one batch, the public objection period, the objection period is still 7 months. And we're doing that because our goals are to have a fair, predictable, timely process. And we think for a individual or an entity that's objecting to a TLD that 7 months is enough time to consider that. Similarly, all comments received within the first 60 days, which is the time period's already started, will be forwarded to the evaluators for viewing. The comment periods will be left open for the life of the application, but we'll ensure that the evaluators see the comments that are filed in the first 60 days. So I know you know this, and as I described yesterday in a meeting some of you were in, we're quite pleased with our partners on this. For each type of evaluation we're doing, we have multiple firms. We do that for a couple reasons. One is to provide capability and breadth, and the other is to be able to address conflict. So if one firm is conflicted out from evaluating an application, there's another firm, the other firm can step in. So the financial, well, you can read this, but I'll say it anyway. The financial and technical evaluators are Ernst & Young and KPMG. They'll do most of the evaluations. Also, some of the evaluations will be done by JAS Advisors. JAS is the firm that's performing our quality assurance function for the evaluation, so they'll be monitoring all the evaluations that take place, selecting statistical sample sizes to do a blind evaluation again, and continually monitor the process to ensure there's consistency across the scoring as we go forward. They're also doing some financial and technical evaluations in case KPMG and Ernst & Young are conflicted out. The geographic name review is being done by the Economist Intelligence Unit, which is an arm of the Economist, and also British firm Interconnect Communications, and they're doing this in partnership with the University College of London, which has some fantastic linguists. When I met with them, I got to hear Greek being spoken with an ancient Greek dialect. Similarly, the string similarity evaluations are being done by Interconnect 2 and also InterIsle. The DNS stability checks are being done by InterIsle. They're the sole entity doing these, but InterIsle is really a firm that brings together many different consultants, so they have a stable of, you know, the 30 experts we would all pick if we wanted to do this. So there's some redundancy provided across that population anyway. And then the community priority evaluations are done by The Economist and also by Interconnect and the University College of London. The objections and dispute resolution procedures are staffed and in place. And looking at this, there's another comment I want to make. So all those firms you see that were on the previous slide are fully staffed. So I'll tell you that Ernst & Young has 100 evaluators in place, hired and trained. And KPMG, I don't know the exact number, but they have a similar number. So each one of these firms have their evaluators in place. They've been through a calibration session and training and been onboarded and are ready to go. With our dispute resolution providers for objections, the arbitration area of the International Chamber of Commerce, WIPO for trademark objections, and the Internet Center of Dispute Resolution for string similarity objections, we've executed sort of lightweight agreements, either MOUs or exchange of letters. And so their rules for hearing these the objections are published. We've retained the very distinguished Professor Alain Pellet to hear the to provide the independent objector function, and we've also retained an auction provider. With regard to analyzing applicant support, sort of financial aid applications, we set about recruiting panelists, volunteer panelists, to to evaluate the financial aid applications, and we're gratified that we received 80 applications from people in 47 different countries in all the different regions, and with a wide diversity in experiences and background. So even though there's a small number of financial aid applications, another success here is that we've identified, we think for the long term, a way to evaluate financial applications for this round and future rounds. And because there's only these three applications, we're going to convene a five-member panel and evaluate those. The applicant support timeline is fairly straightforward. We'll select and train the panel members by July, and then provide a notice of results to the financial assistance applicants in October. Because it's such a small number, we'll just evaluate. ICANN will just evaluate those applications with the rest because there's not significant cost there. Batching. Batching is an important topic for us here because of the request from the GAC. We received GAC advice that this should be carefully considered in this meeting. And the board, new GTLD committee, actually considered this earlier and asked us to create more time for discussing batching. So we're going to talk about it here for a few minutes. We'll probably have some questions about it. This afternoon, there's another session preparing for the second round. We decided the program schedule has been updated, and we decided to bifurcate that discussion. So we're going to talk about preparing for the second round a little bit and how we can launch that discussion and planning in our community here. And then we'll also outline in with some more detail some of the issues around batching to inform your discussions and how we should go forward. And I'll talk more about batching later this afternoon, but certainly our goals are to effectively administrate the process, to process applications in an effective, economical way, in the fastest way possible while maintaining our quality standards. Batching should be done in a way that's fair to all applicants. So if there's a way to move some applicants forward that's fair to all, we should consider that. But if not, we should release information at the same time. Remember that one of the purposes of batching is to meet our obligations with regard to root scaling requirements, and that our commitment there is that we're not going to delegate more than 1,000 top-level domains in a year, but more importantly, it's 1,000 GTLDs a year, but in some sort of smooth fashion that we won't delegate them all on the same day. And then, as I said, we want to ensure consistency and quality across all applications. So you know that the digital archery tool has been suspended. The GAC has given us advice to consult with the community, so I'm starting this a little bit now and a little bit more this afternoon. The board's going to be meeting with each stakeholder group or constituency tomorrow. So those constituencies or stakeholder groups that are interested in this topic, I know there's conversations going on now. Meetings are scheduled this afternoon. They can discuss their opinions with the board and the members of the new GTLD committee during their constituency discussions, and other meetings can be arranged. So I'm going to close my description of the evaluation work. I'm gratified at the progress to date. We've already started evaluating applications, and it appears at this stage we'll meet or exceed our schedule goals and meet our quality goals. And so with that, I have the pleasure of introducing someone you all know, Karen Lentz, who's going to discuss the other implementation work that's going on. You want that?
Thank you, Kurt. I will touch on a few areas of additional work that aren't having to do with processing of applications but are associated with the new GTLD program. In each case, there's a more detailed session scheduled that will provide more information, but I will just touch on the highlights here. So the first area has to do with the rights protection mechanisms. There were a few new mechanisms that were introduced as part of the new GTLD program. The first of those, and we've approached implementation of these roughly in the order that we think that they'll be used. So the Trademark Clearinghouse is a repository of rights information that's intended to support the startup services of new GTLD registries. So we've approached that one first. The URS, or Uniform Rapid Suspension System, it has the goal of addressing registrations in new GTLDs once they have launched, and so that's the next upcoming item. But in terms of implementing the clearinghouse, we've pursued two tracks, one being securing service providers to who can perform those services. There's a trademark validation function and as well as a database administration function supporting the registries and offering their startup services. And so we've been securing providers for that, for both of those. We've also taken input from the community, including rights holders, registries, registrars, and other interested people to help us discuss some of the key implementation issues, and we've taken that feedback and crafted a draft implementation model, which is available. And then as we've continued to get feedback on that model, we are currently engaged in refining those requirements. In terms of the URS, what we'll talk about at this meeting is that in our implementation, as we discuss the current system with potential service providers for it, it seemed that the cost targets, which are were part of the goals of the URS, would be that it would be a timely and cost-effective and a fair mechanism for addressing complaints about abusive registrations of domain names. And so with cost being one of the major goals, the feedback from providers was that they weren't sure that the cost targets would be likely to be met with the process as it was. So we're examining that question a little further here at this meeting, looking at reviewing what the goals were, whether they can be met in the process as it's currently designed, and if not, then what adjustments can be made so that those goals can be met. And also on the horizon, we have anticipating planning for the next application round of GTLDs. The GNSO policy advice that forms the basis of the program indicated that there should be a continuous opportunity to apply for new GTLDs. And so, the advice was to start off with rounds until there was a steady state process. And so we do have the expectation that we will build an ongoing program. And we have also some commitments with regard to how we close out the first application round. Obviously, the first of those is to process all of the applications. We've also made some commitments to look at how the program achieved its goals in a few areas. And in particular, those were discussed quite a bit. Root zone scaling, what was the impact of adding many new TLDs on the stability of the root zone? And then also the new rights protection mechanisms that were introduced, how effective were they in meeting the goals of rights protection? So we've got a project plan in formation that has the objective of generating the prerequisites, determining what we would need to do to have achieved in order to be ready for a subsequent application process. And I'll leave this slide up. This is additional sessions here during this meeting where we will go into the details of the things that Kurt and I have been discussing. And I think that closes the slides. If we have questions or comments, we have two microphones up here.
Now, while you think about questions, I just want to reiterate that the session that's at 15:30 or 5:30 this afternoon was changed to accommodate some discussion of batching. So it's a half hour about planning for the new GTLD round and a half hour of batching. And realizing that that's really not enough time for a lot of give and take with the community, but an opportunity to identify issues so there can be discussion as the meeting goes on. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Kurt. Would it be possible to, Chris Despain, would it be possible just to go back to slide 11 for me, please? It's just a point of clarity. Okay. What are you doing there? Oh, smooth.
Well, there's a batching process, and I'm not so sure he's going to get to go second.
Okay. I just want to make it absolutely clear, in case anybody misunderstands. In my understanding is this slide is not meant to indicate to everybody that if we had a single batch, it would take 15 months. I just want to make it completely clear that all applications in 15 months would mean if you did your batches, you'd have them all done in 15 months, not you. It's the thing that says early projection, all applications in 15 months,
right,
is an early projection of it would take 15 months to do it in batches, not that it would take 15 months to do it in a single batch, because we don't have that information yet. That was all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Hi, Michelle Jordan. I have about 6 questions from remote participation.
So why don't you give us 2, and then with all the people standing behind you, and 8, you know, we want to get Adrian off the stage as fast as we can.
Okay, the first question from Mark Andrews. If an applicant wishes to make alterations to questions 13 to 22 of an application, has ICANN got the process ready to be shown to the public yet as per last week's announcement with regards to how to make these alterations?
Yeah, so first the guidebook says that material changes to the application aren't allowed, but ICANN has a process for weighing requests for changes and then publishing them. So, yes.
Okay. Second question from Andy G. Given that current registrants of IDNs and CNO have been waiting for years for their IDN.IDN equivalents to finally be made available to them, would it be possible to process the IDN translate applications from VeriSign and PIR without further delay? This would have the advantage of testing the rest of the system to hopefully prevent further unforeseen circumstances.
Thank you. So we'll let Amadeo go, and then...
Hello. So it's not time for digital archery bashing, right? So just first, a short comment and some suggestions for the process in front of us. The comment was in the number of applications from Africa, Latin America, and I would say even other parts, where this is a success or a failure. I didn't see that as a failure at all, for the same reason you did, comparing with existing numbers. What we could do to have more, I don't think it's just outreach, or mainly outreach, or even outreach at all. Our experience in core in talking with these people is that running a registry is too expensive a game. It's not about the $185,000 for the application. It's that the technical requirements and all the requirements there for the ongoing operations make that very expensive for things that risk being very small registries. So perhaps we need to revisit the belief that one size fits all in the future and lower some requirements for some applicants. Having said that, on the concrete evaluation process, we have some requests, especially let me focus just on customer support. Do you have a system for escalating questions when you send that to customer support? Because our experience that we hit a wall of thanks for your question, we don't understand it, we don't want to understand it, and this is ICANN, just open another ticket. All right? I'll give you a very simple and a stupid example, letter of credit. In many countries, for instance, Switzerland, letters of credit are not paper anymore. Banks don't do paper letter of credit. They only do SWIFT messages, electronic messages. And you need the SWIFT code for the bank of the receiving party. customer service was refusing to understand, to escalate, or to provide that information from the beginning. So we just got that from HSBC, and somewhere you should be aware that you have hundreds of letters of credit waiting for you. Just to make you happy, we were doing screenshots of the electronic transaction and putting that in there. But, you know, you won't see a real letter of credit because it's not done anymore in most countries. Or another question, like, administrative check. We get a request typically at end of business Friday, California time. So we got that in Europe at 5 in the morning. And we are allowed 2 days to answer. Which means beginning of business on Monday. It's not that we are lazy, but is we have customers that perhaps might be a public administration that perhaps would like knowing what we answer to these questions. And they don't typically work on weekends for ICANN's pleasure. So please take that stupid things into account. Things are different in the world. Allow one business day. If that's a holiday in Barcelona, that's my problem. But at least one business day to answer things, right? It's not that difficult. And the second thing, if there is a brick wall that we are hitting with customer service to find a way where we can request this being escalated to somebody in ICANN that may have an answer for that. Thanks.
So I thought every day was a holiday in Barcelona. So Amadeo, in a weak attempt to address some of your issues, the process was intended to be very flexible. That's why there's not objective criteria, so that small registries and large registries apply. But I can understand a sense that there's a minimum baseline that's still too high for many applicants from those regions. And so, we want to work in the second round to make the application process more flexible and understand what are the minimum requirements so that a registry could reliably operate at a lower cost and come from those regions. And two words about customer support. So I heard what you said, and that's why during my talk I said we're going to put people in each region so there'll be a local point of contact for customer service. And we tried to anticipate, different types of letters of credit and laws, but we learned a lot about different customs that in areas that we did not anticipate. And so when we received a request about either ICANN having to, being requested to sign a letter of credit or some other new wrinkle, that took some cycles either within our finance team or other administrative functions. So while customer support got the request and was very anxious to answer in a day, sometimes finance had to work with other entities to get answered. And I know that comes across to applicants, because I'm a customer myself in another segment of my life, as a stone wall. And that's why we want to improve the customer service function and provide some local point of contact. So your points are really well taken. Adrian?
Thanks, Kurt. Excuse me, Adrian Kinderis. First of all, I'd like to thank Chris Despain for his, what I think is an important clarification with respect to batching. That's helpful. Thank you, Chris. Secondly, I have a couple of quick questions. First one, Karen, with respect to implementation issues, you did mention Ebro. Can you provide us quickly with an update as to that? Because that seems to have been dropped off the list there, and I assume it's part of the program.
Yes, thank you. I wouldn't say it's dropped off the list. It's not on the slide, but it certainly is continuing work. Where I believe we are with it is in the fairly advanced stages of selection process. So for Ebro service providers.
So we received applications. We've shortlisted them, and we're scheduling interviews during the month of July for those candidates. It's planned to select, two or three providers, so we get coverage in different regions, and we get coverage for those addressing large registries and small registries.
Thanks. Two more small points. First one being today's glitch, or the glitch in the last 24 hours with respect to clients being or applicants being sent notifications that they have one day to commit their digital archery. Can you please get in touch with those clients or at least put something on the website sitting at my computer just before, I got three inquiries from clients wanting to know what's going on and how they do their archery.
Yep.
They need an official word. Me telling them, oh, don't worry about it. I'm a bullshitter at the best. Anyways. Lastly, I stress also the requirement for ongoing communications, for an ongoing communications campaign. Oh, they put that word up there. I apologise. My mother's going to hate me.
I thought that's hyphenated.
I think it is hyphenated.
All I've used is an adjective.
it just occurred to me in a conversation I had with some clients today that when UGTLDs go to go live, that ICANN should maintain its global communications campaign such that, you know, we're not getting one or two TLDs going live and causing end user confusion. And I hope that there is funding and thinking around just how they're going to continue with communications. Thank you.
Yeah, and those notifications are already taking place that you mentioned. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Kurt. My name is Ken Stubbs. I have a couple of comments. First of all, I'd like to put in what I guess I'll call a placeholder. In the last month, roughly, ICANN has received approximately one-third of $1 billion, which is well in excess of the budget of my city of 85,000, to process 2,000 applications. This money was submitted by the applicants based on the representations that the funds were going to be used to recover costs in processing the application. I heard a very troubling comment by the CEO at the Reveal in London indicating that if there were surplus funds available from this application process, that these funds would be used as the community sees fit. It is never, having been involved in this process from the very first initialization of the working group, it has never been represented that that was what these funds were to be used for. I'm speaking to the board as well here. It has always been our understanding that the proceeds that were to be received from the auctions, which I've asked on three separate occasions to please develop a plan for, was to be used, put in some sort of a fund that would be used as the community and the board thought would be in the best interest of the overall community. Most of the applicants that I have talked to are very concerned about these comments. We'd like, at some point in time, some sort of reassurance from ICANN that this does not that the excess does not represent some sort of an eleemosynary endeavor that the applicants have gone through. And secondly, there's one other thing I need to make a comment on. I talked to Akram about this in Los Angeles, and I speak, sir, to you. I've not had the opportunity of meeting. I'm very, very concerned about your ability, that, given the staff levels that you have, to manage the process. You've had a significant experience over the years. You know as well as I do that you can ship this stuff out. I worked for Pete and for AY at one point in time, to outside vendors to do the work. But it has to come back to you. It has to be managed. You have a significant amount of work to be done inside. At this point in time, it was my understanding that you were planning on staffing up for this endeavor. I have been told by Akram that it takes a significant amount of internal resources to train people and so forth. To the best of my understanding, this work has not really been initiated yet. There have been discussions amongst the staff and budget discussions and so forth. Please, I implore you, this has got to get done. You've got an awful lot of products sitting at the entrance there in the production line, and we've got to get it through to the other end. The only way you're going to be able to manage this process and to recognize the efficiencies is to put resources and people in place. I'm only speaking from 45 years of experience. So I very much, on behalf of the applicants, ask you to please give us some assurance that this is a principal priority for you. Thank you for hearing me out.
Thanks, Ken. Hi, Warren.
My name is Werner Staub. I work for CORE. We are also part of the organization support applications and also provide applications. I was also concerned about the announcement of about 15 months for the single batch approach. which we do not believe is necessary. Specifically, we would like to draw everybody's attention to the fact that now we know what it is inside of the applications. By the way, I urge ICANN not to stop Google or other search engines from indexing the contents of the applications, which is currently the case. They're not indexable. It is public information that should be available to the community. There should not be barriers. And by the same token, I urge ICANN to remove the indexing protections on the ICANN knowledge base for new GTLDs, where it access even sending a link is impossible, so people don't know about key features of the application. But coming back to this, 15 months, no. I think it is 7 months, eight. Why do I say that? Because we can see from these applications we have at least 500, probably 600, exclusive use brand TLDs. None of them is going to sell domains to any third party. They are their own customers. And ICANN doesn't have any business deciding whether KPMG is good enough to be a provider to KPMG and whether Amazon is good enough to be a provider to Amazon, and whether the speed at which the Whois service for Amazon says to everybody that any given name inside Amazon belongs to Amazon, or whether Amazon is fast enough in receiving requests via EPP from itself. This is, as we can see now, a substantial chunk of the work that we have in front of us, which was budgeted, and where we can see there is no evaluation necessary at all to speak of. However, we missed in the task a question about that. The criterion has been defined. The last update to the question has come on January 16th about the definition of use in exclusive use. But applicants were not allowed to say that they are exclusive use, or more specifically, that they request exemption from specification 9 of the registry agreement. If we add this to the task now as a question where they can respond, and we associate it with the opt-out of the most of the evaluation, we still can leave the door open for them to come later. So I know Amazon, actually, it's about all trees in the Amazon, and not they can still do that if they want. But if they want to be single use, they can do so, and we save them and ICANN and the community a lot of work. Now, the other thing that we see in the current applications, there are many portfolio applicants, many more than we thought. They have identical applications for many TLDs. Do we really want to get separate teams to look at each one of them separately in different batches, so to make sure as the evaluation is going to be different between each? It's just one. If you take that into account, we go probably to even less than 7 months.
So I those are all very good comments. And as we identify efficiencies in the process, we'll take advantage of them. And we have instructed and we are allocating applications based on similarity. So the one evaluator is going to get like the applications that are similar. But we've also gotten feedback already from the evaluators that many of the technical back-end providers that are common are actually doing a very good job, that they're writing technical answers to the questions that correspond to that registry. So they're not seeing so-called cookie-cutter answers that always receive the same score. They're receiving different answers. So some of that commonality we anticipated is not there. Nonetheless, we recognize that it's there. And so you and I could talk about this for a long time after this, about single-user TLDs and how that could be implemented and how not. You mean, at the end of the day, there's not a category for single-user TLDs. You know, you answer your 50 questions, we evaluate the 50 questions, and then the single-user TLD can someday decide to sell registrations or allow its marketing channel to become a TLD or do any number of things. But the process is developed through the policy discussions, you know, didn't create that category, or nor do we create it later.
Could I just, sorry. If you want to have good batching, let those people who decide 5 years later that they want to have third-party users be evaluated at that time with respect to that question, rather than clogging the process right now.
Okay. Thanks for it. Stefano.
Okay, Stefano Trumpi. The question is about batching and timing. And since you received 751 applications for 230 string competition. Then there should be an idea now how to manage these things. And I would like to know which are the steps and the timing involved. And further, of course, I think that there should not be any evaluation starting before the problem is solved. You cannot evaluate 13 applications for the same string all together. It is a waste of time. So in this case, perhaps if we go for batching, then in the first batch, you should solve first all this problem of competitions, because in the end, the number will be not 1930, but 1409. So this means one batch less. At least, if you have a 500 batch or something like that. So it is important in some cases, perhaps, in order to save time, as it was said before, to analyze cases that have similar problems to be solved, and then will be easier than to solve also in further batches. Thank you.
So, Stefano, that's excellent, and thanks for doing the arithmetic that I forgot earlier. But in fact, you know, we cannot see more than 1,409 delegations because of those collisions or that contention. So we feel comfortable saying that we can do it in fewer batches. To a certain extent, how those are processed are up to the applicants themselves. Some will see the contention and withdraw. Some will see the contention and seek to form partnerships, or beat their chest. It's fairly clearly laid out in our process that unless an applicant says they're dropping out, you know, we're obligated first to do the evaluation. And then take those who have passed at the end, and then if the contention's not resolved by those guys themselves, you know, we'll resolve it for them. But it's a really good analysis. Thank you.
Hi, Christina Rosette, speaking to my personal capacity. Two questions. I'll ask them both, and then your answers. The first is, will ICANN be extending the public comment period by one day to compensate for the time in which the applications were made available after reveal day? And the second is, I'm hoping you can provide a little clarification as to when the objection period went from 2 weeks past the close of initial evaluation, which it's been since the first version of the guidebook, to 7 months for all applications. Because it was always, in every single discussion we've ever had, the idea was that the objection period should extend past initial evaluation so that a potential objector could wait until after those results were available to know whether or not it was necessary to object. So looking at this now, it seems that you're either saying that all the applications will be processed in 6.5 months, which is clearly not the case, or potential objectors are going to have to go to the expense of putting in objections, and applicants are going to have to defend objections before anyone even knows whether the application passed. And to me, that seems like a tremendously significant waste of resources all the way around.
So, good questions. I almost feel empowered myself to extend the public comment period for one day. We really should think about extending it longer than that if the process is going to be much longer. We had an extended discussion around the objection process, and going back to how the objection process was developed, the discussion at that time was about 6 months felt right for the objection process. That was enough time for objectors to make up their mind. And then somebody, maybe it was you or somebody else, raised their hand and made an excellent comment. Well, why don't you extend it an extra few weeks to get it past the end of the initial evaluation, because then objections could be made after initial evaluation, just as you said. So I think that's the genesis of it, with the idea that the initial evaluation might take 15 months and not start, and that's further extended by the GAC request for the 60-day period. So now we're talking 17 or 18 months. Is it reasonable to have an objection period for say 18 or 19 months, and the reason it was remained the same is our goals are to have a fair, predictable, smoothly running process for this, and we thought in some cases it might not be fair. Say an entity says, I'm going to object to that guy, but I'm going to keep it hidden from him for a year and a half while that entity burns money and invests in his operation. So we thought there was sort of a duty for objectors to let an applicant know that there's objection. You know, in 6 or 7 months seems reasonable. To keep it hidden for a year and a half or longer didn't seem right.
But why also, not just post? Why? I mean, if it's still the case that initial evaluation results will be posted on an as-completed basis, why not just trigger the 2 weeks from there? Because I'll be perfectly honest with you. If it's, I'm going to wait until the very last day anyway.
Right. So if the last day is in 7 months, then all the applicants, I want to give you two reasons.
Right.
All the applicants are on the hook for those 7 months. They're sitting there burning money, not knowing if somebody's going to object. And an objector standing there the whole time saying, I'm going to object. So 6 or 7 months seems more reasonable than a year and a half, 18 months to stay in operations while somebody knows they're going to object but keeps it hidden. So we thought for fairness, 7 months was a better period of time than 18 for an applicant to keep working, not knowing an objection was coming.
Okay.
And then another reason is goes to the smoothly running process bit. So we have these agreements with the ICC and WIPO, but it's something that's not been done before. And they're expecting, you know, some bit of work. But we want to keep that operation together, and to keep it together for, say, a year is lower risk than keeping it together for, you know, 2 years or longer if we extend the objection process. So we think we can guarantee the stability of that whole objection and dispute resolution process if we keep the time period limited. So that was a sort of balancing, but that was a discussion, and we can continue to have a discussion.
Well, and I think if the rationale has in fact changed, that needs to be more clearly communicated, because there's a lot of entities out there that are waiting to see how initial evaluation results go.
Thank you.
If they need to be working from a 7-month clock, that needs to be communicated immediately.
Okay.
Hi, Michelle Jordan, reading more from the remote participants. George Amadio, question. Are any provisions or plans to make the application supporting documents available publicly?
Do you know the answer to that? They are available. Read it again.
Are there any provisions or plans to make the application supporting documents available publicly?
So, each of the questions in the guidebook or in the application form is labeled as to whether the information in it will be posted or not. So I think there was some delay when things were in attachments in adding that to the public postings that are on the website. So in the case where, you know, that information is intended to be public, then yes, it is the intention to post it. For the questions that were, you know, not labeled as being public, then no.
Okay. Next question, Rubens Kuhl. Regarding the testing evaluations, how many in percentage would have passed and how many would have failed evaluation in the test sample?
So that's confidential. That's confidential. I don't want to share any of that information. But I'll say that they scored the information, different firms scored it very evenly. There is an indication that the majority of applications were competently done. I'll say in many cases the evaluators thought a clarifying question might be necessary in order for the applicant to flesh out some information in order to get the point or 2 points the applicant was seeking for that question.
Okay, I have more questions, but I'll go back to the back.
Yeah,
line.
And so Nancy, so we're like way out of time, right? So I see two repeat questioners, but if everybody could take like a minute, it'd be good. Mike, you get two.
I'll
I got this stopwatch for Christmas.
There you go. You could start it. Thanks. Mike Palage. First comment with regard to increasing efficiencies. Having worked with a large number of applications involving six different technical back-end providers, it would be helpful, I think, if ICANN asked or their evaluators asked the providers for their template answers. So instead of the evaluators having to go through the same 300 or 400 pages of VeriSign, Afilias, or Neustar text, they could focus on the deltas, the red lines. And again, I would agree with you, they were not cookie cutters. They did adjust them, and it would help if the evaluators were focusing on the deltas, not the same 300 pages of text. I think that will increase efficiency. Second point, my recommendation with regard to increasing transparency, it would help if on the new GTLD website there was a dashboard where we could track the number of applications that are being completed, the initial evaluation from both a technical as well as a financial. And I would submit to you, since you're using multiple providers, if you could color code it so we could see how many Ernst & Young are doing, how many KPMG are doing. I think that would help from a transparency standpoint, and perhaps my be a little bit of a competition, help the evaluators get their work done competently, since we do have quality insurance provisions in place already. Thank you.
So, thanks, Mike. So I'll tell you that applications will be metered to the different evaluators, so as one evaluator does better, either faster or cheaper, that evaluator will get more. So I understand your transparency discussion. What? I don't know. I have to talk to the legal staff and when we can actually reveal that information. So I've got the suggestion. Hi, Amadeo.
Okay, it's just a point of order, not regarding the substantive issues. If you have many questions, it's simply that just looking at the agenda, seeing that there was only 1 hour for the new GTLD problem, then you have a very interesting session of the next round. We're assuming the next round was not dealing, for instance, with batching and digital archery, because this is current round. A problem. So many of us organized an alternative session starting now in the Barcelona room. Nothing to do with that. It's not my idea. It's just the name of a room here. It's to provide ideas to bring later in the week to you. Say, look, these are the things that many of us think are good for prioritization or alternatives to batching or better ways to handle batching than digital archery or even how to improve digital archery. My God, if that's possible. Right? In its sense, it's perfect. I mean, perfect chaos. Now, the question is that you said at the beginning of the session that the supposed next session of new GTLD round would be dealing with the current GTLD problems. Can you clarify on that to know what we were doing now, going to the other room to do that, or staying here to help you? If we are staying here to discuss that, this format is not very helpful. We need to focus on issues and not just people queuing here. And the things we want to discuss, the things like, you know, Mike or Adrian or Bernard have been saying here, ways to really improve helping you to give from the community ideas on how to prioritize applications. So how can you clarify that? This was chaired by Thomas Ricker, but I don't see whether he's in the room or not. So if he's around, I will call him just to decide what to do in this session.
No. Thanks, Amadeo.
So what's the plan for the next 2 hours?
Well, we make plans, and we post the schedules. I don't know. What we've posted as far as our schedule is, we scheduled a session to talk about the second round. Every ICANN meeting, we've been asked to talk about the second round, so we scheduled a session on that.
I'm not complaining about the schedule.
I know.
I'm just asking what will happen now. I mean, the past is the past. Yeah.
Right. So, but there's a DNS abuse forum, which is the next session here. The session that Kurt mentioned on the second application round is at 5:30, and the session on batching is at 6.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks, somebody else. Yeah.
Vladimir Shadunov. My comment is about string similarity evaluation. So we have a number of cases where we have exact matches between the applications, but there are also cases with non-exact matches. So my request is, do you think some additional information will be published about the standards similarity evaluation panel will use evaluating the similarity of strings? Because applicants will get into string contention sets, and they need to negotiate. Only one will be left.
Do you want to answer that, or do you want me to? 10 if you want. So the standards are published the way they are. So a quite extensive discussion occurred all about this issue and how to measure that, whether it should be measured mathematically or through some algorithm or some matching program. And it was decided, really, that confusion is a human reaction, and confusion and the likelihood of confusion should be determined by reasonable average people that are looking at strings that are familiar with the script and language of that. And so the standards, very brief, but in the guidebook, that there has to be a likelihood that user confusion would result if both these TLDs would be submitted. And that's the extent of the guidance given to the evaluators.
For example, one common case that occurs a number of times, an English language singular and an English language plural. What do we do with it? Is it a contention set or not?
Yeah, so that's up to those evaluators. And you could see for yourself that a longer string with an S might be more confusing or less confusing than a stronger, a shorter string with an S. So, again, it's a somewhat subjective determination, and it's going to be made independently and not by
us. I think it will help if we had some more detailed information earlier than just in the end of the initial evaluation period. Thanks.
Ken Stubbs again. This is more or less directed at the comments directed at the directors as well as you. There's a couple of real big elephants in the room here. We can finish the evaluation tomorrow, but if we don't have a legitimate, fair, equitable methodology in place for delegation, we're stuck. It's a very difficult task ahead of you. I would strongly suggest that you try as hard as possible to give us clarity on this as soon as is practical for you. We move ahead with the evaluation process, but at some point in time, that elephant's going to rear itself, number one. Number two, part of this overall process is the injection of the governmental sector and their processes as well. I have a suggestion for the ICANN board. If you run into a situation where the GAC has indicated that they will have difficulty reaching a decision because they have a difficulty getting together, spend a few bucks and subsidize a special session for the GAC to consider only that issue. I think most of the applicants in the room would say that's a very good expenditure of capital, given the fact that most of the applicants are burning money. Most of the applicants need that certainty to know when it would happen. If it makes 60 or 90 days difference just to help the GAC get together to make those decisions, please consider it. It doesn't have to be done at an ICANN meeting. It could be done at a special meeting of the GAC in Amsterdam or in wherever. So please consider that. And you know as well as I do, if it costs $1 million or whatever it costs to get them all there, get them into the hotel and give them a couple of days to get it cleaned up, it's the best money you'll have spent given your overall budget. We need that clarity. Otherwise, we're going to get down to February or March, and everybody's going to be sitting around wanting to know, where are we going to go from there? Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. So pick one.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, one last question. How is the process of the Applicant Support Review Panel, SARP?
Applicant Support Review
Panel, the SARP?
Yes.
The question is, how is the process of it?
So the applicant support panel will be comprised of volunteers that will be selected from the 80 candidates who submitted an interest in being a panel member. And then they will use the procedure that's posted in the applicant financial support criteria. So the procedure and the standards that the SARP will use is published in that link. And so I don't know, Michelle, somehow if you can make that link available to the questioner,
sure,
that would be terrific.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have anything else, Karen? All right.
Okay.
So th- Thank you very much. There's, if those of you who are interested in having an intimate discussion about batching, we learned from Amadeo there's a meeting going on in the Barcelona room, and there'll be some discussion about the issues associated with that here later on this evening. Nancy, and to the next presenters, we apologize for being late. Thanks very much for sitting through this and your constructive comments.